Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 4th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, From Hospitals to Hospitality, Experience Champaign-Urbana. Brilliant Spirit Award winner brought experience with people and chaos gained in healthcare to current job managing two Urbana hotels. This article is by Jana Wersima. Urbana. Laura Rainey comes from a big extended family, with her mother being the youngest of 8 kids and her father the youngest of 14. She says that's likely one of the reasons she's always been a people person, a trait that serves her well as sales manager at Comfort Suites and Roadway Inn, both in North Urbana. I've always been drawn to people of all different nationalities, Rainey said. I mean, people just interest me. Being in hospitality, I get to meet people from everywhere that are going through so many different things. She's also enjoyed getting to build relationships with repeat guests, to the point where, as soon as dates are announced for events like Ebertfest or the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon, she recognizes some of the people who will call in by first name alone. Rainey also has a knack for helping guests navigate another major annual event, the Illinois High School Association's Boys Basketball State Tournament. Imagine what it's like to be responsible for all of these teenagers, said local real estate broker Todd Salen, who serves as a community host to teams during the tournament. It's more than most can handle. This is just a calm wind in a big storm, and she helps high schools navigate that storm very well. For that reason, Salen nominated Rainey for one of Experience Champaign-Urbana's Brilliant Spirit Awards, which honor area individuals and organizations for their contributions in making the greater Champaign-Urbana area a better place to live, work, and visit. The 48-year-old Champaign native will be honored alongside 4 other winners at Wednesday's annual Toast to Tourism celebration. While the hospitality industry is a natural fit for an extrovert like Rainey, it wasn't plan A. After graduating from high school, Rainey became a certified nursing assistant with Carle Foundation Hospital and the Windsor of Savoy. 4 years later, she's switched to working in at-home health care. I absolutely love senior citizens. So if I'm not going to be in sales, I know that I will go back to probably healthcare, Rainey said. However, seeing patients pass away was depressing, which led her to switch to working in hospitality. Rainey then managed the historic Lincoln Hotel in Urbana, which recently reopened as Hotel Royer, but had to find a new job when it closed, which led her to join Comfort Suites a little over 15 years ago. Despite the differences between nursing and the hospitality industry, Rainey said there are certain similarities, such as the importance of showing compassion. The level of care is on full display during the IHSA state tournament, Salen said. As a community host, he is assigned to a visiting team each year to help with any specific needs they might have to make their stay more enjoyable. He noted that this can be a hectic time for teams who don't know if they're coming to the tournament until the Monday night before the Thursday semifinals. The teams that win their quarterfinals that night then have several arrangements to make in a very short time frame with the help of their hosts. As a community host, Salen knows which hotel his team has been assigned by the IHSA, but he doesn't know which team he'll have until after Monday night. I've been very fortunate as a community host the last 4 years to have my teams assigned to Comfort Suites, managed by Laura Rainey, he said. Laura is a remarkable ambassador for our community. Each time that my teams have stayed at the hotel, they have raved about her hospitality. For instance, there's always a huge sign at Comfort Suites welcoming the student athletes, rooms available for team meetings, and, per the hotel's norm, a free hot breakfast. You can imagine what it's like to have 30-something 15, 16, 17-year-olds attack the breakfast table, Salen said. They've got to be prepared for it. Still, despite all of the chaos, Rainey makes things easy for teams and is extremely patient, he said. The IHSA tournament is a gold mine for the hotel, Rainey said, though she acknowledged that it also comes with some challenges. We get 4 to 6 kids per room, and there's a lot of wear and tear that comes with it, she said. But it's the best. I was a traveling parent. Both my kids played traveling sports, so I can sympathize with the parents and the coaches on both ends, whether it's traveling or booking the hotels. That sympathy played a role in how Rainey handled a last-minute hurdle during this year's tournament. A high school that was playing in the championship for the first time had been under the impression that the IHSA would cover all costs, including hotel rooms, she said. Keith Johnson, who had been assigned as the school's community host, was waiting for the team to arrive when an employee told him that the hotel had not been paid. Johnson then spoke with the principal, who explained that the school had expected its travel agency to pay the hotel bill, but the agency hadn't yet been paid by the school district. It got to be quite the circus as things evolved, he said. I talked to the coach and explained, "You have to have a payment method," Rainey said. "Normally it's a 72-hour cancellation policy for the entire group if we don't secure a credit card or something." While she could have canceled the booking and opened up the block of rooms, Rainey decided to wait for the school to get things in order. Coming from my background as a parent who had kids that traveled in sports, there was no way I was going to cancel their block, she said. I know that most hotels in town, they are sticklers when it comes to that. I tend to bend the rules a little bit just because I would want somebody to do that for me, and they were trying so hard. The hotel finally received the payment about 2 hours before the team arrived. I thought it was nice of Laura on her part to kind of roll the dice and leave the rooms locked down for them because they technically could have released those rooms at 6 o'clock Wednesday evening for non-payment, Johnson said. While Salen cited this story in his nomination, it's far from the most dramatic thing to happen during Rainey's career in hospitality. For instance, one time a woman who had overdosed was found in a hotel bathroom, and Rainey, thanks to her experience as a nurse, was able to revive her while the hotel waited for paramedics to arrive. "I will never ever forget that," Rainey said. "It was on a Wednesday. It was not great weather, and she came in about 3 days later after she got released from the hospital with gifts, and her boss called me and sent me a bunch of wine. It was scary, but it worked out." There have also been people who have tried to skinny dip in the hotel pool. An older man who got drunk and walked up to the front desk naked. And famous guests, such as Pauly D from Jersey Shore. If you've never worked in a hotel and you just want to see what it's like, there is nothing like it, Rainey said. The customer service is great. You get to meet a lot of people, but you get to see all kinds of crazy. Continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Year 70 of ALAH, high school's senior trip to the East Coast, involves a new twist. Some 54 high school students and 5 adults left Arthur at 5 a.m. Saturday, so they can make it to Pittsburgh in time to catch the Pirates and the Padres at PNC Park. Afterward, they zipped over to nearby Duquesne Incline, spent the night at a hotel, and traveled to the Flight 93 Memorial on Sunday morning. They'll reach their destination, Washington, D.C., around lunchtime. Anytime we can get our students to a new city and a new experience, it's awesome, ALAH Principal Stephanie Sigmiller said. The annual trip is a big deal for the students who have been fundraising since junior high and benefit from phenomenal community support, Stigmiller said. They'll be in D.C. through Wednesday, visiting everything from the U.S. Capitol to the Holocaust Memorial Museum to the Supreme Court. Someday, when a big decision comes down, they'll be able to say, I was there. I know what it looks like, Sigmiller said. Another highlight, each senior writes a letter to a veteran whose name is on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. We drop those off when we visit the memorial, Sigmiller said. Many of the students sketch their soldier's name to take it back with them. To be honest, it is pretty emotional. Today on Snapchat, tag along with high school confidential reporter Addison Yeagle, a senior at ALAH whose father took the trip in 1991. And in history, area history in 1925, five loaded cars on the Peoria and Eastern Manifest freight train, number 92, eastbound, plunged off the east end of the trestle over the Sangamon River at Mahomet, causing the costliest wreck the division has experienced in a long time. Frank Saturma, a structural iron worker who was riding in one of the cars that took a dive, was taken to the hospital with minor injuries. None of the cars went into the water, all piling on the east embankment and wrecking that end of the trestle. First report said a homeless person died. In 1975, University of Illinois campus safety and security officials had begun plans to modify the structure and monitor use of the southwest stairway in the psychology building, where one student was killed and another seriously injured in two apparent falls or jumps this year. Workmen erected temporary plywood partitions on several levels of the 8-story shaft to block it from falls, and a security guard now patrols the building from 3 to 10 p.m. In 2010, the Center for Women in Transition in Champaign, which shelters homeless women and children, plans to consolidate with A Woman's Place, an Urbana domestic violence shelter, on July 1. A Woman's Fund, the parent organization for A Woman's Place, will cease to exist. International history, today's highlight, on May 3, 1999, the Bridge Creek Moore tornado struck the Oklahoma City metropolitan area, causing 41 deaths and nearly 600 injuries. The tornado's top wind speed of 321 miles per hour was the highest recorded on Earth. And continuing with Kathy's mailbag, what will it take to revitalize Urbana's Philo Road business district? CVS Pharmacy is the latest business to announce it is closing its Philo Road store. As Mayor Diane Marlin entered her last few days in that role before Mayor-elect Deshaun Williams is sworn in today, we asked her to respond to readers' questions submitted in recent weeks. Here's what she had to say. Several businesses on Philo Road between Florida Avenue and Mumford Avenue recently have closed or moved. However, there are two bigger issues in the adjacent neighborhood that have to be dealt with first. One issue is the abject failure of some landlords to maintain and manage their apartment properties. Some property conditions have gotten much worse in the last couple of years, to the point where buildings are partially occupied or have been determined unfit for human occupancy. A significant number of multifamily properties in that area also have transitioned away from local ownership. It's much harder to hold an LLC with thousands of units around the country accountable. The next question is, I saw in the paper a few days ago that an influx of teenage umpires has made staffing issues a thing of the past for CU Little League baseball games. That's great. How did the leagues manage to recruit them? Kewanee's CU Little League president, Brad Lieb, said the majority of their umpires are kids that have played through our Little Leagues and had great experiences. So it's just a natural progression for them to stay involved. The biggest thing we have done to drive up our numbers is create a good environment for them, and we have set very high standards and expectations for our coaches and fans regarding treatment of the umpires. We have driven home the point that our umpires are young and they are not perfect. We are thankful to have them, and arguing or complaining about balls and strikes is not acceptable. Creating an environment where a 14-year-old kid doesn't need to be harassed by an adult yelling at them because they missed a call goes a long way to those former players wanting to come back and be a part of the league still. It doesn't hurt that the umpires get paid, but the biggest factor is the environment of the games, Lieb said. And my phone's map app identifies the Savoy Circle K, just north of Sonic on Route 45, as a Holiday gas station. Is it changing hands? I reached out to Circle K's Quebec-based parent company, Alimentation Couche-Tard, more than a week ago and got no response. But available evidence suggests that the answer to the reader's question is no. Couche-Tard, as it is nicknamed, acquired the Holiday Station Stores brand in 2017. Holiday gas stations and convenience stores are common in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and several other northern tier states. But the company has slowly been retiring the Holiday name over the stations in 10 states, according to a March 2024 article in the Rochester, Minnesota Post Bulletin. The Holiday Station Stores website is nested within the Circle K website, and the Holiday webpage's store locator search tool shows both Holiday and Circle K branded stations. The search results for our areas all show Circle K stores. For what it's worth, a cashier at the Savoy Circle K told me on Thursday that he's virtually certain no branding change is in the works for that location. Here's a fun fact. The French name, Alimentation Couche-Tard, roughly translates to food for night owls. And does the State Farm Center, or REO, plan to film their June 14th concert in Champaign? Would love to see it at a later date online or on WILL-TV. Great idea, if only it were doable, said Grant Thompson, area vice president with Central Illinois Multimedia Group and CIMG Concerts. While it would be very popular, and we'd love to make it available to the fans who couldn't attend in person, unfortunately at this time, due to copyright and other legalities regarding the show for later playback, is not an option. And continuing with, when I was a little girl, I remember a very large brick building near Weaver Park in Urbana. It might have been some kind of home or hospital, maybe for women. Any idea what it was? I think the building is long gone. This question came from a caller on the April 25 radio version of The Mailbag on WDWS, A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart. The Champaign County Poor Farms Poor House would check all those boxes, except for one. The main poor house building, constructed about 115 years ago, is still there. Long before Social Security and other state and federal safety net programs, county governments provided food, clothing, and shelter for those who lived in poverty or were chronically ill, mentally ill, or elderly and in need of care. In exchange for that care, the inmates, who were able to work, earned their keep by doing farm work and or domestic chores at the farm. Judge J. O. Cunningham wrote in his 1905 History of the County that at first, and until about the year 1858, The care of confirmed paupers was sold to the lowest bidders at auction, and temporary relief granted from time to time by overseers of the poor. The county's first poor farm, poorhouse, was in St. Joseph Township. By 1865, the farm was reestablished on a larger tract of land just east of Urbana, where the current-day county complex includes the Brooklyn Center, jail, and other facilities. In a 2010 Preservation and Conservation Association newsletter article, author Brian Adams cited a 1909 Urbana Daily Courier story that said the 122-acre farm's original buildings have long since outlived their usefulness and have become unsanitary and entirely inadequate. Prominent Urbana architect Joseph Royer designed a new poor farm superintendent's residence and a male-female inmate residence. Construction started in 1910 and wrapped up in January 1912. Also in 1912, the county voted to house delinquent children to avoid jail stigma. A building for the insane was another part of the complex, as were a number of outbuildings that would have been typical for a large farm. A county hospital was on the second floor of the main building. Based on 1915 Sanborn fire insurance maps, Adams wrote that the men's ward is depicted as the west wing of the structure, adjacent to the south side of the superintendent's residence. The women's ward occupied the east wing of the structure. Between the men's and women's wards were toilet rooms, a laundry room, dining room, and the kitchens. In 1936, a new isolation/contagion unit was added to the property to provide care for those with polio and other communicable diseases. It was discontinued as an isolation unit in 1947, but there was talk of reopening it in 1949 due to a surge in polio cases locally and across the nation. By that time, Burnham City Hospital had opened its own isolation ward. The two surviving Royer buildings served at the Champaign County Nursing Home after the poor farm closed in 1951. So depending on when she was born, the reader who posed the question may be remembering either the poorhouse, the county nursing home, the isolation unit, or some other nearby building that is long gone. And train engineers approaching a railroad crossing usually blow their horns to warn people who are near the crossing. Are they required to sound two long blasts, a short and then another long one, or is that simply a tradition? Tom from Tolono called this question in to last week's Penny. Not surprisingly, federal regulations specify how and when train horns are to be sounded in advance of a crossing, and they apply to both freight and passenger train engines. Under the Federal Railroad Administration's train horn rule, all locomotive engineers are required to sound train horns at least 15 seconds and no more than 20 seconds before reaching a public highway rail grade crossing. A trackside whistle post sign, usually a black W on a white background, marks the spot where a train crew should sound the train's whistle or horn. For trains traveling faster than 60 miles per hour, the horn must not be sounded more than 1/4 mile in advance of the nearest crossing, even if this results in an advance warning of less than 15 seconds. A good faith exception allows engineers to begin sounding the horn up to 25 seconds prior to arriving at a crossing, when precise arrival times cannot be estimated, according to the FRA website. Train horns must follow a standardized pattern of two long blasts, one short blast, and one long blast. This pattern should be repeated or prolonged until the lead locomotive or cab car occupies the crossing. Although the rule does not specify the duration of long and short blasts, a regulation requires that train horns operate at a maximum volume of 110 decibels and a minimum volume of 96 decibels. For rail lines that run in congested areas where constant sounding of train horns would seriously disrupt quality of life, it is possible for a local government to establish a quiet zone. This may be for, say, a rail line that runs unusually close to homes or a hospital. Public authorities seeking to establish quiet zones must first mitigate the increased risks associated with the absence of the train horn, according to the FRA. And the next one is, why does the city-owned parking deck at Neal and Hill Streets in Champaign require head-in parking only? If you're parked next to a large vehicle or two, it's darn near impossible to see approaching cars as you start to back out of your spot. Head-in parking is regulated by Champaign City Code. Manner of parking, according to Public Works spokesperson Chris Kester. The code requires head-in parking whether a space is metered or has a curb line or some other barrier. Presumably, a concrete wall in a parking deck would count as a barrier. Kester said many municipalities have this regulation for several reasons. Not all vehicles have two license plates, so the uniformity of viewing license plates dictates head-in parking only. Also, if a vehicle backs in, it can be harder for drivers pulling out to see oncoming vehicles or pedestrians. Requiring head-in parking makes sure the rear of the vehicle backing out is more predictable. In spaces where we have angled parking, backing into a spot would mean the driver is going against the flow of traffic, potentially causing an accident. And what's going up just west of Farm Credit Services in Mahomet? They're moving a lot of earth out there. Village Administrator Patrick Brown told me, this 10-acre site is a 7-lot commercial development, including a tentative site for a new proposed Country Inn and Suites. And we have, are the new I-57 and 74 interchange flyovers built with any special materials or new technology that will keep the surfaces safer when they freeze in the winter months? Not exactly. Ken Crawford, project implementation engineer with the Illinois Department of Transportation, says the flyovers are not built with any special materials that will keep the road surfaces safer when moisture freezes in the winter. The bridge deck will be longitudinally grooved to increase traction, and the District 5 Bureau of Operations will continue to pre-treat bridge decks to combat frost, he said. The flyovers do feature a couple of innovations that will increase their life expectancy. The beams are metallized in lieu of painted, and the reinforcement bars in the bridge deck are stainless steel in lieu of epoxy coated. These are utilized to protect the materials against the corrosive de-icers used in the winter. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, May 4th, 2025. Please stay tuned.